Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I am one of your hosts, Greg.
And I'm your other host, Ronak. And today I think we've got a pretty cool episode for you. Greg is our resident expert on Airbnb properties and short-term real estate. So today I think we're going to just pick his brain a little bit for how he's able to pull this off and how you might be able to do the same. So Greg, how are you doing?
I'm good. Your hair looks fantastic today. Did you do something different?
Thank you so much. That's so polite of you to say.
It's like, it's got a lot of body to it, man. Look at that. Did you do something different? Is that a different product?
I just got out of the shower right before we started recording.
Okay.
But I got to tell you, the motivation is Pierce Brosnan, when he was playing James Bond, I always thought that his hair just looked so slick and smooth.
That's
always wanted that.
I remember when I was a kid, when I was watching the Mission Impossible, I think Mission Impossible 1, Tom Cruise's hair in that, I was like, oh yeah, I want to be Tom Cruise, and never looked the same, but that's okay. All right, so getting back to the actual topic at hand. So the background is my wife and I have jumped into short-term rentals a little bit. We have a property in the Catskills that honestly does quite well in terms of number of guests and the amount that we're able to charge. And we have a new one that we're getting up and running that I was actually up at from Thursday morning until Sunday morning, then went back down and met back up with my family. But we're getting one up and running up in the Adirondacks. It's a beautiful property. It's kind of like a luxury cabin feel to it. So it had three bedrooms, three bathrooms, actually one, three and a half bathrooms. And then we converted a exercise room that was in the basement into a kind of kid's bedroom. So double bunk beds, full bunk bed on the bottom, and then twins up top. Really, really awesome. And so, yeah, we're just going to talk a little bit about, you know, getting an Airbnb up and running. How do you do it? What tools did we use to kind of make the process a little bit smoother and less work on our end? And just kind of a high level overview of the tools that we use and some of the strategies that we're using to get it up and running, hopefully quickly and, you know, cash flowing quickly.
So, Greg, like before we get into all the tools and everything specifically, and we can do a much deeper dive on this later on, but can you just give a high level overview of like why someone might want to buy a piece of real estate specifically for Airbnb or short-term real estate? There's so many other options out there. You know, you could do long-term leases, you could invest in stocks or bonds or anything else. Like, why is this something that somebody should at least think about?
Yeah, so for me, there's a lot of different advantages with short-term rentals that we can jump into a little bit. Maybe we'll do some like full deep dives into some of these topics. But for me, there's kind of three different reasons that you're going to want to do a short-term rental versus potentially a long-term rental. We'll just focus on real estate for now. There's, you know, a lot of different options in terms of where you put your money, but specifically real estate focused. So with short-term rentals, you get something that is eventually going to hopefully cash flow for you month over month. So that's really one of the big pieces, is just the income aspect of it. So how quickly can you get up to kind of cash flow positive with these properties versus a long-term rental? So for example, like we have our Philadelphia property that we'll probably put up for a rental unless we, you know, get a really good sales offer on it now that we're leaving Philadelphia. That one you might be able to make $1,000 a month off of it after paying down your mortgage, paying off any kind of fees that you have associated with anything. With a short-term rental though, depending on the location that you go into, you might be able to cash flow $10,000 a month, potentially, depending on kind of what property you're looking at. So from just like a returns perspective and from a cash flow perspective, a short-term rental in my mind is going to give you a lot more bang for your buck, but it's also riskier, right? So with a short-term rental, you could have a very dry period where you might not have any renters for an entire month or two or three. Maybe you have a really low season. So I think it brings on a little bit more risk than having somebody that's going to rent your place for, you know, a year at a time. You know exactly what's coming in month over month. But for those that are looking for kind of higher risk, higher return, short-term rentals is much more interesting in terms of like cash flow, at least for me. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. The other thing with short-term rentals is, so you get the cash flow piece, but then you also get what you get with long-term rentals as well, the appreciation piece. So you're holding these properties with the thought in mind, like, A, I'm going to be cash flowing month over month with this property, but then also you get the appreciation on the back end. So if you hold this property for 10 years, maybe it goes up 60-70% in terms of like what you ultimately sell it for. Some of the properties that we own, ultimately, I think we're going to sell. But this cabin property that we just bought, I honestly don't imagine us ever selling this property. It's like one of those properties that I can see myself going back to in like my old age when the kids have kids and we're grandparents. And it's like, bring everybody to the cabin, have fun. It's like a 16-acre property, honestly, like in the middle of the Adirondacks. There's not much around it. Although apparently Instacart does deliver there, which is really nice because we did that this weekend. So the appreciation thing is the other big kind of piece in terms of just what income can you bring in? What is your return on investment look like? So you have the cash flow piece month over month, hopefully, and then you also have the appreciation piece. Again, if you're holding these properties kind of a long term, likely it's going to appreciate over time, especially some of the properties that are like in really high demand areas, like the Catskill house that we have has already gotten offers through Airbnb to buy the house. Like it's a pretty in demand area. The other piece is really tax advantages. So with a short term rental, there's a lot of kind of, I don't want to say tax loopholes, but tax strategies that you can use that make a short-term rental, in my mind, a lot more beneficial than a long-term rental. So one of those that I think we touched on a little bit on this podcast is getting a cost segregation study done and claiming something called bonus depreciation. So what bonus depreciation does is basically it takes what usually is like the useful life of a rental or of a investment property, which I think is like 37 and a half or 39 years. And what it does is it actually breaks down the components of that house. You can't do it with land because the land is technically like you can never depreciate the land. It's just not anything that you can do. But you get these cost segregation studies that basically breaks down the useful life of different things within the property into like 5, 10, and 15 year buckets. Anything that's 15 years or less in terms of a useful life. So like, you know, a new kitchen countertop or new cabinets, lighting, electrical, all of those things you can depreciate in one single year. So what that means is you can basically add all these things up and you can then claim that, you know, basically you have paper losses, even if you're making, you know, nice cash flow on the property. So you can reduce your taxable income if you meet certain requirements, like you have to either have reps, which is like real estate professional status, which means likely you or your partner spouse is kind of a real estate professional. If you don't have that, then you really just have to be able to claim that you are the primary person working on that property. You've spent the most hours doing stuff. If you're able to claim those things, then you can claim bonus depreciation. The nice thing is instead of it being counted as passive income deduction, it's actually active income deduction. So meaning like things that are on your W-2, your 1099, whatever it is, you can actually deduct that amount from your taxable income. So let's say that you make $400,000 as a physician. And if you get your bonus depreciation to come out to say, oh, it's $400,000, you wipe out all of your taxable income, which is amazing. You don't pay tax on it. But then you have to also factor in like how much income are you making off these properties? So likely you're still going to pay tax on it. But people use that as a strategy and say, okay, next year I'm going to go buy X amount of real estate so that I can then depreciate that amount of real estate to cover all of the income from Airbnb. Like that's a strategy you can use. The problem is that that's starting to go away. So the bonus depreciation was 100% bonus depreciation. It's being phased out this tax year, 2023. So when you're filing in 2024, it'll be 80%, then it goes down to 60, then 40, then 20, and then gone. But those things change. So, you know, honestly, like depending on who's in the White House and Congress and the House, then you might see those things come back. But those are the three different things that I have in mind when I'm thinking, like, why the heck would I want to invest in short-term rentals? Cash flow, appreciation, tax advantages. Those are the big three.
Those are three really big things. I mean, you're really making the case for the financial reasons for why investing in short-term real estate might make sense. All three of them sound like great strategies to think about. Cash flow is definitely important if somebody is thinking about replacing a salary or retiring soon. Like it's nice to have money coming in every single month or whatever the cadence is. Your net worth grows over time with the appreciation. If you look historically, real estate has done well in general over the course of pretty much the entire country's history. And who doesn't enjoy tax efficient strategies? So I think that makes sense. Greg, to me, short-term real estate does sound a little bit scary. Like what happens if there's a plumbing issue in the middle of the night? I don't know any granite countertop manufacturers.
There's always those issues.
Like, yeah, I'm just very unfamiliar with this space. I'm guessing that you've come across a few tools to make it a little bit easier, to make it more helpful. Can you maybe chat about some of those?
Yeah, so let's go straight from the beginning. So like when you're looking for a place to potentially buy it as a short-term rental, so clearly you use Zillow, you use Redfin, all of those tools everybody knows. So we found a house. We found this cabin in the Adirondacks. We actually found another house that was in outside of Hudson, New York, that we were also considering buying. So let's start with, why the heck are you buying a short-term rental in this real estate market? So honestly, I think this is the best opportunity that people have right now when it's just slow. Like, inventory is low, sure, but people that are actually purchasing homes is also pretty low. So if you can find kind of a gem of a place, you're going to have the ability to negotiate. At least we did a couple months ago when we actually bought this place. So it was originally listed, I think, at over $1 million originally. We ended up putting in a super low offer just to do it. We're like, well, we don't need to buy the house. And honestly, like, I don't really care if they think this is a low ball offer. Nobody else is offering on it. It had been up for, I think, a couple months, both properties. And so we put in two different offers and ultimately got both of the properties down, one to $820,000 and the other one to $840,000. So the cabin we ended up getting at $820,000, which was well over like $200,000 below ask. And we were like, okay, that sounds great. So we ended up getting both offers accepted and we ended up having inspections done on both. The Hudson house had a lot of things that would need to be fixed, a lot of water damage, a lot of things that would need to be done with the basement. And so we ultimately said, you know, there's just less work with the cabin overall. Let's just go with the cabin. And so we did. And so where did we get the mortgage? So I honestly, we went through traditional banks and had a terrible process. It was honestly awful because a lot of them still haven't really adopted much of technology. A lot of them are still just a bunch of phone conversations. You have to like email documents back and forth. I was like, how is this still the way that you have to do it? So we ended up going on better.com. This is not a plug for them. We actually used it. And they had a lot of, so there's stories about their CEO, but we won't go into those. But it was honestly a great process. Their technology is fantastic. You basically just apply for the loan. You get all of your documents in this really nice setup online portal, similar to like, trying to think if there's another process that's similar to what you have to do for this. Yeah, I can't really think of anything, but a beautiful portal, easy to use. You upload your stuff. They, you know, look at it. They accept it. They add more things that you have to do. You ended up having to put in like 60 or 70 different documents in, depending on how complicated your finances are. But we got a great rate. And so we got a great rate from Better. And then the other thing that I would say to always do is make sure you get a competing offer so you can always play them off each other. So never lose the opportunity to negotiate down these interest rates. And so we did. I think Better originally offered us like 6.375%. We went to Ally, which actually uses the Better.com technology. So again, it was super easy to use. They offered, I think, a 5.75% interest rate, higher amount of closing costs. So we went back to Better and we said, hey, can you match this interest rate? They did. They had a less closing cost. So we went with Better. And it was a very easy process, super simple, super, literally just most of it is online. And then you show up at your lawyer's office or the title company and you fill out your paperwork. So that's tool number one, is going to be using some of these newer companies that understand that you don't want to spend weeks and weeks and weeks doing these paperworks back and forth, blah, blah, blah. Check out Better.com. Check out Ally. They're great. They're easy to use.
Yeah. So Greg, I would also add that we've made an episode previously on buy, borrow, die, where we talked a little bit about taking a loan from a brokerage account instead of a traditional mortgage. Is that an option for people that are thinking about investing in an Airbnb property?
Yeah, I would say if you can borrow against your own assets rather than spending like, you know, cash that you have on hand or selling your stock, don't do it. Don't do it. Like, why drop your net worth if you can just borrow against yourself? And it's really good terms. So yeah, the buy, borrow, die strategy for, you know, using it in combination with real estate, great idea. I think, again, this is not financial advice, it's financial education, but I would only use those types of products, buy, borrow, die, HELOCs, anything like that, where you're taking out kind of a line of credit or a loan against the assets that you own. I would only do that for things that are cash flowing in the end. Like, you do not want to go and buy, you know, a new car or a new vacation home that you're not going to rent out to anybody else. It's not going to cash flow. It makes no sense. You really want to make sure that the things that you're buying are going to A, appreciate over time and also hopefully provide income for you and build your net worth. But yeah, using a brokerage account to do the buy, borrow, die stuff makes a lot of sense. Again, if you're interested in doing that, I would again negotiate the crap out of that. Like, you do not want to go with the first offer that you get from somebody, especially if you have like over there, like usually you'll go on their website and be like, oh, if you have over $2.5 million in your brokerage account, then you get the lowest interest rate. That's the interest rate that they advertise online. realize that they can go lower than that. Like, it's an interest rate spread for them. So the way that they make money is they say, okay, you're going to have some kind of, you know, fixed rate that we're going to charge plus our interest rate spread. So you can always negotiate those things. And you can say, look, I'm looking at four different brokerage accounts. Can you match this one? Can you match this one? Can you match this one? And maybe they can go lower. So you always want to negotiate these things. Don't just take the first thing that you get. It's the same thing with like buying a car. Like, it's all a negotiation.
All right, cool. So that makes sense. Yep.
We bought the house. Great. Now how the hell do you get it set up? How do you actually get it up on Airbnb and you know, do all the stuff in terms of like buying furniture, especially if it's unfurnished? So we'll talk a little bit about that. Honestly, it'll be pretty quick. So we have a property manager that we pay who is one of our friends that wanted to leave the teaching profession. She's amazing. She's great. She's super organized, a lot more organized than I ever would be. She also has kind of like this interior design eye. So not everybody's going to have that. So you might have to do a few of these things by yourself, but there's a couple different tools that we used. Specifically, let's just talk about furnishing the house. So that is a process unto itself, right? You have to think of what is the design that you're going for? Because again, you want to stick out as an Airbnb. You don't want to be just a bland place that, you know, think about going to the beach, renting an Airbnb. They're all the same. They're all these like pastel colors, there's shells everywhere, blah, blah, blah. You want to stick out a little bit on Airbnb. You want to have some kind of element of the house that is going to draw people in compared to everything else around you, which is why it's important to look at comps in the area. So what Meredith does, our property manager, she goes and basically creates an entire design for the entire house, room by room by room. And so she does that. And then, you know, typically, if you would have to do this by yourself, you're going to have to go to individual websites of all of these different furniture vendors, these art vendors, et cetera. You're going to have to purchase the things. You're going to have to figure out where do you ship it to. You're going to have to figure out, you know, how do you unbox them, get them up to the property. So the couple tools that we used, again, these are not advertisements. These are just, we've used them in the past and they work really well. The first one is called Minoan, M-I-N-O-A-N. What they do is basically they have hundreds of different vendor relationships with like Article, which does a bunch of sofas, Joybird, which also does a bunch of furniture, all of these other vendors that they partner with. And basically what they do is they track all of your orders in one single platform. So you can order from all of their vendor partners. It's a little more complicated than that, but you can then see all of your orders, where they're at, where they're shipping to, what is their shipping time, is anything delayed? Instead of having to go to several websites or hundreds of websites, depending on where you bought everything from, it's all in one organized location. So actually, their business model is pretty cool. So basically, they also get a discount because they're basically buying in bulk. They have all these customers that are going to be coming in and ordering different sofas and love chairs and all that kind of stuff. So they offer, usually it's like 10 to 40% off. So by using this service, and it's completely free, which is the other crazy thing. So by using the service, you're saving money. You're also saving the time of figuring out where the heck are your packages. So it's actually a really nice tool to use. It's called Minoan, and you have to apply to be able to actually use it. You have to go through a little bit of an application process. It's pretty easy. So we'll link to that in the show notes. Just makes ordering all of that furniture super, super easy. All right. The other thing I would recommend, especially if this is going to be a property that's a bit further away from you. So the Adirondack House is 5 hours from Philadelphia. It's 3 hours from our place in New York. So we weren't going to be able to just like pop in and, you know, take packages in and all that kind of stuff. So we used a receiver. What that is basically it's a factory, or not a factory. It's like a storage facility. I think the one we used, we'll plug them because they were really good, Arnoff. They're called Arnoff. I think they're all over the country. And so what they do is you can, instead of shipping stuff to your house or to the new house, you can ship it to this receiver company. What they do is they sort everything, they organize everything. They say, okay, this came in. They send you an email saying the pool table's in, the bunk beds are in. The other cool thing is they can build things within the facility, within the warehouse. So you don't have to build it when you get there. So for example, they built like the grill for us. So we didn't have to build the grill once they delivered it. So what they do is they hold your deliveries, they can build your deliveries, and then they actually bring your deliveries into your house. And you can organize it in a way that they actually bring the bed into the bedroom. They actually build the bed in the bedroom. So again, you don't have to do all that stuff, which is really nice. And I think overall that cost us everything from receiving to holding to building to putting in the house and in the exact places they needed to go, I think overall it was like $5,000. Had we done that by ourselves, that would have taken multiple days of building the furniture, setting everything up. It saved us a ton of time because there's always other projects you have to do outside of building furniture. So that's another one, is just the receivership piece, the warehousing piece. So you got Minoan, you got the receiver. Tying those two together, fantastic. A lot of time savings.
Yeah, that sounds really helpful, especially if somebody is a physician. I'm guessing you have a pretty busy schedule, and having to drive back and forth to worry about things like packages sounds like quite a headache. So this sounds like a great tool, Greg.
Yeah, and it saved us so much time. Mm-hmm. So we were up there again from Thursday. I was up there Thursday to Sunday. We got a ton done because we didn't have to build everything. It was all mostly built. And there's a few things that you build, like shoe racks and stuff like that, but otherwise pretty easy to do. All right. So now let's say that you get all the furniture there. You do all your projects. So like the other projects we did, we built like a very nice pergola on the pool deck. So this Adirondack cabin has a gigantic pool. It is huge. It's 60 by 30, way too big. But we built like a 36 by 12 and 9 foot high pergola. It's beautiful. Well, I'll show you the pictures later on. And so we did these projects basically to upgrade the property a little bit so that when the people that are coming, they're going to be like, oh, this is really nice. Because we only have, all right, let's talk about that. So getting your short-term rental up onto Airbnb. I will say this, but don't, you know, maybe I won't say it. So get your place on Airbnb, get it up there as soon as you buy it. Wink, wink, start getting people interested in the property as early as you possibly can. So we didn't have new photos of it because we haven't put in the new furniture. We haven't done anything to it at this point, right? So you still want to get people renting it though as fast as you possibly can because you want to start cash flowing as fast as you possibly can. So we honestly just threw up the real estate photos that were on Zillow, Redfin, and all that just to show the property. Like, this is what the property looks like. We're going to be furnishing it in a completely different way because most of the photos don't show any furniture at all. So that's one tip, is just get it up as soon as you humanly can so you can start getting interest in the property, start getting people to book it. So we ended up booking out the entire summer's weekends basically as soon as we put it up. So you want to just be honest with people, be like, hey, we're professionally furnishing this. It's going to be beautiful. Here's a link to our other Airbnb just so you can see what it looks like at the other place. That's kind of what we're going for in terms of the quality. Okay. So you got your Airbnb listing up. Fantastic. What tools can you use on Airbnb to manage things and to optimize things? So the first one I want to talk about is something called Price Labs. What Price Labs does is you can think about it as an Expedia or a Kayak where they're showing different prices for different things out into the future. So what Price Labs does is it takes into account different holidays, it takes into account different events that might be happening in the area of your Airbnb that will increase the demand for the property or decrease demand for the property. And so what it does is basically it's like a relative price adjuster. So you can set kind of like your minimum base rate that you're wanting people to pay for weekdays, weekends, and then you can say like, what do holidays, like, do you want to charge 30% more than your typical weekend rate, blah, blah, blah. And so Price Labs will actually fluctuate your rate daily for, you know, every date that you have on your calendar. Because if they're seeing that, hey, there's high demand in your area right now, let's boost the price because you're probably going to make more money that way. It's honestly a fantastic service. It's a monthly cost. It's like a SaaS company. They don't take like a percentage of your bookings or anything like that. That tool you definitely need to use. It's honestly, it's fantastic. It's made us so much more money than had we just figured out how do we price this ourselves, because it's doing it all the time in the background. You can't do that as a, you know, especially if you're a physician that has a full-time job. No way. Use Price Labs, worth the money every single time. And honestly, like, at the Catskills house, we have somebody renting it from July 1st through July 8th, $11,000 booking. Like, had we not used Price Labs, no way we would have gotten that much of a booking for July 1st through July 8th. Just no way. So you're like, you're going to be surprised at how much people are willing to pay because there might be increase in demand for something that you have no idea about. There might be a music festival coming to town or nearby, and all of the places right around the music festival have all been taken, and now it's coming out to your area. So like, those are the things that it takes into account that you don't have to think through. outside of Price Labs, there's a bunch of other tools that you can use to make, you know, automated messages. Airbnb has a bunch of their own tools to do that as well. And then honestly, like if you do not want to manage your property yourself, use a management company. And again, I would negotiate those rates because some of the management properties out there charge a hell of a lot of money, from like 25% of gross bookings. I've seen, you know, 10%, 15%, but 25% is not unheard of. And if that's going to be the case, that you have to have a property management that takes a percentage of your gross bookings, you need to make sure you do that math ahead of time to make sure that your cash flowing will still cover whatever that you need to cover in terms of a mortgage or whatever.
If you're hiring a property manager, also do your homework on the property manager themselves, right? So that there's going to be folks that do a really good job with this and folks that do a really lousy job. Just because somebody charges a higher fee or a higher percentage, that doesn't automatically mean that they're going to be better. So Greg, go ahead.
One more comment for that. Like if you look on Airbnb, you'll see some of the large management companies, just when you go through people's properties, look at their reviews and look at the numbers. Like, is it a 4.6? Is it a 4.7? Because those are like not the property management companies that you ultimately want to use if they're getting a 4.6 or a 4.7. Like we have, I think on our Catskills property, it's a 4.98 right now. So the person that manages your property and communicates with guests is hugely important. It's funny too, because the only less than 5-star review we ever got was when our property manager was on vacation and I had to deal with guests. And it was the only poor review we've gotten. And I was like, oh man, I must be really bad at this. So keep that in mind. Like the people that you choose to represent your property is honestly, I think, probably the second biggest decision outside of like which property to buy.
So Greg, let me ask you a couple, maybe more lightning-esque questions. You can dwell on them if you want to, but I just have a couple questions of how you're managing all this. So first, if somebody leaves a little bit of a mess in an Airbnb property that you're managing, who cleans it up, right? It's like, how do you take care of that? Because you're not driving up to these properties and fixing the bed and cleaning up a spill or anything like that. How do you make sure that things are ready for the next renter?
Yeah. So we use just basically our cleaner. We have a cleaning team that always does the property. They know. So that's the other thing. It's like the property manager is dealing with all of that, right? So they're getting the phone calls. They're getting the FaceTime videos of, hey, the property got destroyed this weekend. It's going to be an extra 5 hours to clean. It's like, that's fine. Like that's to be expected. You know, people aren't necessarily going to treat your property as if it's their own. It's too much to ask for from short-term rental guests. So yeah, Meredith has a cleaning crew that she works with and she communicates with. And the other nice thing is like, she has worked with them for the last several months of really creating like expectations. Like here are the things that you need to do each and every turnover to make sure that what you're doing meets our expectations for the property. Because that's the other thing, like that, you know, reviewers will ultimately talk about is like, what is the cleanliness of the property? And so we had originally a cleaner that wasn't that good. We stuck with her for a little bit too long and then ultimately brought in this other person to do a deep clean. And we're like, this person's so much better at cleaning than the other person. So you want to think about building out your team to make sure that you're getting high quality people that do really high quality work. Because all of that, honestly, like everything on Airbnb is just review run. Like you want to make sure that your reviews are as high as possible.
Yeah, and then all of the properties that you're managing right now, I think, are within driving distance of you. How important is distance? Like, would you feel comfortable managing an Airbnb across the country, or do you want to keep it within specific radius?
For me, I would feel comfortable across the country, but I would need to build out a team out there. Like, I think the property manager needs to be able to go to those properties kind of quarterly, at least, to understand how is everything going. Is there new furniture that we need to add because some of the old stuff is broken that maybe your cleaner just doesn't look at? But yeah, I would feel fine expanding into different kind of geographic territories if I was able to build out a team locally. Because again, I don't think the property manager that's on the East Coast necessarily should be doing like a property in Hawaii. That's difficult to do. And honestly, like if we were to expand to Hawaii, I would probably do the calculation of finding like a really good property management company that hopefully doesn't charge too much and we can still cash flow the property. But that's just me. It's nice being able to drive between the properties. I mean, there are some long drives, but also just because you can use them too. Like this cabin one, it's interesting. Like I am all about going up there and spending time because it is just beautiful. The other one in the Catskills, I don't need to go to myself. Like that can be rented out, you know, year round, and I wouldn't be too mad about it. It's a nice property, but it's just not my style.
Cool. So last question, Greg, and sorry to put you on the spot in terms of mathematical calculations here. But you know, if we look at a few other investment opportunities, right? Something like the S&P 500 yields maybe 1.5 to 2%. Bonds yield maybe around 5% right now. Can you give our listeners just like a super, super rough ballpark on what they might be able to expect in terms of cash flow and yield on a percentage basis if they are able to do a really good job with short-term Airbnb properties right now?
So you mean like how much cash do we put in versus how much can we make annually?
That's right.
All right, so let's do that calculation. I'm trying to think of what the furniture costs and everything all in will be. Let's say it's $350 all in for... So basically, how much down payment we put in, closing costs, furniture costs, some of the unexpected things for the cabin. We'll do the cabin since that's going to be the new property. We're probably all in around $350K to get it up and running. And for this first year, I'm probably going to expect somewhere in like the 125 to 150 range. Then we also have to think about what is the monthly payment going to be. So let's do 350 plus 70. So let's say for the first year, you're all in at like 420,000. So 150 divided by 420. So you're looking at like 35%.
Whoa. Yeah. 35%.
Yeah.
Greg, if you're able to compound 35% with taking those yields, investing them into other properties, Warren Buffett compounded at about 19%, and you're at 35%. Wow, impressive. Well, Greg, thank you so much for sharing all of your thoughts and experience about Airbnb short-term rental properties for us. I think this is really helpful. This is space that I think is worthwhile for folks to look into. Again, it is a little bit more work than just clicking a couple buttons on a brokerage account.
Yeah. That's a quick note to make of this. This is not passive, right? Like this is really, even with a property manager that is as great as the one that we have, like it's still not a passive income thing. It's not putting, you know, 400,000 into Jeppy and just like watching income roll in. It's not. It is much more active. It's much more fickle. So you might have good months, you might have bad months, you might have good guests, you might have bad guests, and you will always have stuff that comes up. You're just like, I really don't want to pay for more things. But in the end, hopefully it comes out to be a good investment. You know, that's not taken into account if multiple things break at the cabin or if we have a flood or whatever. So that could definitely go down in terms of like, what is the actual yield and cash on cash return? It could be much lower. That's kind of the most optimistic viewpoint. So keep that in mind. These things are not super easy to do. It takes a lot of work. You have to build out your team. And I think honestly, that's the biggest advice I would give is build out your team in a way that you do not have to worry about too much.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Greg. Really, really appreciate all your insights.
We'll see you next time on the Physician Syndicate Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate Podcast.